John Jay, the first Chief Justice of the United States Supreme Court, once said this: "Providence has given to our people the choice of their rulers, and it is the duty as well as the privilege and interest of our Christian nation to select and prefer Christians for their rulers." End quote from the first Chief Justice of the United States Supreme Court. Well, fast forward to today, and President Trump is about to nominate someone, some of whom are Christian people, and they're going to be crucified for their religion by some of those on the left. Wow, what has happened between then and now? Hello and welcome to this portion of Vocal Point. I'm Jerry Newcomb, and our guest, it's a great privilege to have him return to our studio here by phone. His name is Dr. Peter Loback. He's the founder and president of Providence Forum. And Peter Loback and I had the privilege to co-write a big, thick book about the faith of George Washington, George Washington's Sacred Fire, documenting his true Christian faith. Dr. Loback, Pete, it's great to have you back on the program. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you, Dr. Newcomb. Jerry, it's great to be back on your program.
Okay, so the Constitution says in one of the amendments that there should be no religious test applied to anybody that's going to serve for federal government. But it seems to me that those on the left seem to target against born-again Christians or committed Catholics despite their religion or because of their religion. they go against them, and that would be, seems to be the case about what's going to happen. This is recorded before the actual nominee, so I want you to go ahead and comment on this issue of religion and the way the left crucifies anybody who really believes in Jesus.
Well, let's begin by saying that when you quote John Jay, he recognized that the founders were essentially in the Christian tradition. Some were very devout believers, some were churchmen, and some were more sketchy in their faith, but they all recognized the extraordinary contribution of Christianity to Western civilization. The Protestant tradition had developed various Republican ideas that had begun to work through Western Europe, and also had an idea that Christianity in a Protestant form could be consistent with monarchy. So the idea of him calling the nation a Christian nation made sense in that certain respect. But when the Constitution was established, they recognized that there was a danger to have any religious test, because if a government standard becomes requiring religion, it has the effect of creating hypocrites. People are religious because they have to be to get elected to office. It also creates a conflict in what theological structure would be most appropriate in a very difficult situation, like declaring war or bringing relief to people in need, and would there be favoritism between denominations? So the idea of not having an established religion was very important. Without a test of religion, it protected all members. But there was a recognition that this was a risk, because they knew it was possible that a day would come when people who were in government did not care about religion at all and might find the lack of religion to be an excuse to move the country in a way inconsistent with its historic founding. And so all the way through, that risk always seems small because of the fruit of the first Great Awakening. But as we've gone on in time, we have seen since the mid part of the 20th century, in particular, an attempt to create a secular founding in ideology and a secular court, and then a secular government. Well, once you become secular, when you say we don't want God at all, despite the motto "In God We Trust" and the language "One Nation Under God," etc., that becomes an occasion for there to be a movement to attack religion by arguing that no test of religion means no religion at all. Mm. And that is what has begun to happen with the courts and some of their decisions. And what we see, especially now in the left, which is just a polite name for Marxist atheism, and its more mild form is atheistic socialism. Either one of those are hostile to any notion of God, because at the core of their belief is that what's most important in the world is a state. A big state is the only government they want, and it's the only God they will have. And so a God that's transcendent, a nation under God, that we appeal to the supreme judge of the world. They don't want that language or those ideas. Hmm. So they're doing everything they can to remove that ideology from Christianity, in their opinion, that limits their quest for power.
Hmm.
So that's where the battle lines are fought. It is ideological, but our no test of religion has been interpreted to be no religion at all. And we don't have a religion, but the fact is, their atheism is their religious viewpoint. It is a negative belief on God, and it's held with the bias of a radical fundamentalist religionist, and that's what we're facing today.
So when the founders said no religious test, what that meant was the Presbyterians couldn't crucify the Methodists, and the Methodists couldn't keep the Episcopalians from serving, you know, that, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. In other words, it was no denominational test, essentially. All right, so let me first of all timestamp this. You and I are talking in advance of President Trump's nominee for the U.S. Supreme Court to fill the seat of Ruth Bader Ginsburg. However, we do know, because he's released a list of five different women, and the two top contenders both are in the religious category, maybe even the third one as well. But Amy Coney Barrett is listed as the first one. When she was going through the hearings in the Senate a couple of years ago, Dianne Feinstein, the senator, one of the senators from California, said to her, and you know, she is, Amy Coney Barrett is a committed Catholic, the dogma lives loudly in you, and that's a problem. You know, in other words, oh wow, talk about, again, a religious test. But I want you to talk about that, because I think that's not consistent with what John Jay said at all.
Well, let's don't make John Jay our official test. I think let's go back to the Constitution. No test of religion. And they're saying we're going to test whether your commitment to your faith is something that will distort your ability to look at the law. And, of course, the right answer is, Senator Feinstein, the dogma lives loudly in you as well. Because no one is neutral. Everyone brings a worldview to bear upon how they interpret the law, how they look at the world. And I think one of our duties is to make sure that we work hard to recognize that there needs to be a true legal equity. Everyone should be equal under the law. But we cannot make anybody not be who they are. Their conscience is going to govern them. And so that's a problem, not just for the new Supreme Court justice nominee, but it's a problem for the senators. It's a problem for the president. It's a problem for everybody in public life, because we can't stop being who we are. And that might even be a question we would raise about the Democratic nominee for the presidency. Is he living consistently with his faith, or is he living in tension with his faith? Maybe he's not listening to the conscience, where he would have far greater freedom to lead than a judge would. A judge must interpret the law. An executive has the right to lead and to set a pattern and to show a direction. So I think as we look at all these issues, it's like what Abraham Kuyper said. Everyone has a faith. Everyone has a presupposition. Everyone has a worldview. And we must recognize that discussion between Senator Feinstein and also the nominee for the court was two worldviews coming in tension. Mm. And there should not be a test for either one. They both have a right to exist, and the question is, how do we do things fairly, knowing that there are going to be differences of opinions about religion and politics? We need to follow the rules, and that's our Constitution, which says, ultimately, you cannot decide something because of a person's faith. It is their competence and their ability to serve. So I think we need to maintain that very deeply and not allow the left or anyone else to pretend as though they're neutral, because they're not.
You know, it's funny, George Soros, who funds a lot of those on the left in all kinds of different ways, but he said during the days of George W. Bush, he said, and this is a direct quote from George Soros, who's still around funding all these left-wing people and so forth, "The separation of church and state, the bedrock of our democracy, is clearly undermined by having a born-again president," end quote. There he was talking about George W. Bush, but I'm sure he had total problems with people like Judge Barrett.
Well, when George Soros attacked President George Bush for his being a born-again Christian, he was allegedly claiming the idea of the separation of church and state. But what he was actually doing was destroying the freedom of conscience that is the bedrock of America, which is why there's no test of religion and why the First Amendment gives everyone the freedom of religious conscience. And so he is demonstrating, he is undermining America by taking away one of our foundational freedoms. The question of who can serve is a question of competence and legitimately coming to the position, not because of what they believe about God or the world. Can they do their job? So an atheist can serve, but so can a Christian. They equally have a right to pursue that position.
Okay, excellent. How about natural law? There are different views on the point of natural law. Obviously, somebody like Judge Barrett believes in natural law. Clarence Thomas, during the Clarence Thomas hearings, I remember there was some contested words over his belief in natural law. What exactly is it, and how does it apply to judges and the difference in worldview?
Well, the idea of natural law would be a derivation of the Christian claim that we are made in the image of God and we have inherent dignity, and that the world has a moral compass that's built into its fabric, and that by observing the world and our legacy and our culture, we can discern what principles of general equity and virtue might be. A person who says this is the random world where there's nothing right or wrong, and it's more of an evolutionary world of might makes right, they would argue against, if there is a natural law, it's only the will to power. Whoever's in charge is the one who needs to have his position in place. Well, that's a real danger, because the constitutional structure says we're going to limit power to try to bring about a more perfect union, to try to preserve justice. And there's the idea that there's equity. From a strictly reformed Christian perspective, while we celebrate that there is a natural law in the world, we recognize its limitations, precisely because man is fallen and we're all self-interested. We can recognize the issue of conscience, that we can recognize there's a golden rule that seems to make the world go right. But to maintain the principle of godly respect is not something that is going to come just by nature. We need revelation. And so we need the church to guide us, to give us wisdom in this. But the idea of natural law flows from the fact that this is a created order in which God has established principles of right and wrong, and that have been observed through the centuries, and that we're building on that wisdom. So nature guides us, experience establishes it, and it derives from the notion that human beings are endowed with certain inalienable rights. That's, Christians call that being made in the image of God. If you believe you're just a chance accident in the world, then natural rights no longer make sense, and you can seek to oppose them. So I think they're valuable, but as a Reformed Christian, I'm glad that God has given us his word, because that gives us greater clarity on what it means to demonstrate the rights of law and the rights of individuals and what justice is.
Okay, excellent. So we have about 1 minute left. If somebody's talking to a friend and let's say the hearings are going on, and can you believe that Amy lady or that Barbara lady, she goes to church, you know, once a week, you know, whatever. Oh, what is this country coming to? What are the talking points that we should remember in responding graciously to our friends and family?
Well, I think it's just simply, we ought to say, were we upset that Ruth Bader Ginsburg was a Jewish lady and might show up at a synagogue once in a while? Did that bother us? Or were we glad that she had freedom of conscience? Were we glad that John F. Kennedy was a Roman Catholic and he could be elected as president by the Democratic Party? That's wonderful. Aren't we glad that we outlawed persecution of people of religion under great leaders like Thomas Jefferson and James Madison? Aren't we glad that George Washington said that in America we will give no sanction to bigotry? Tolerance, he said, is not enough. It's full freedom. And I think we should insist that full freedom and respect of conscience would be maintained, just as we did when we allowed a Jewish lady, Ruth Bader Ginsburg, to go to the Supreme Court, and just as we allowed a Roman Catholic to become a president under John F. Kennedy, and as we allowed George W. Bush, an evangelical born-again president. They're all within the freedom of the American experiment.
All right. And with that, we'll close providenceforum.org for more information. Dr. Peter Lilbeck, always a pleasure. Thank you so much for joining us.
Great to be with you, Jerry. Bye-bye.
Okay, bye-bye now.